Welcome back to another edition of Top Turnbuckle here on Sportsnet590.ca. Rob Long and just Jeff Rahoman this time. Rudy Blair away. He is sick, but we'll hear from Rudy later in the show as he got a chance to speak with former WWE diva and seven-time women's champion Trish Stratus about her new movie. But David Alter, also not here. He's on the road with the Leafs as they continue to free fall in their season. They're on the road in Montreal. So Dave, unable to join us this week. So
That's okay.
Just myself and Jeff. I always mention this every time there's two people in. If we were a tag team, who would we be?
Oh, this is... Yeah, we have brought this up before. I don't know. Would be I could put a mask on and we could be the Orient Express. I don't know. I don't know. Power and Glory, maybe.
I was going to say Power and Glory.
Yeah,
like
you
that.
Can be Hercules and I'll be Paul Roma, former Four Horsemen member.
Yeah.
If Rudy Blair is listening to this, that'll really get his blood boiling by bringing up the fact that Paul Roma was a horseman. But it's nice. We got the heavyweight champion, the intercontinental champion, the tag champs are off somewhere doing whatever.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
We're the more important of the bunch.
I wouldn't mind being Strike Force.
Okay.
Either. That's not bad.
Yeah.
I
yep.
mean, neither of us have any sort of Latino heritage.
Right.
But, I mean, Strike Force is just a cool name.
Absolutely. And they were a cool tag team back in the day. They had the matching jackets.
Yeah.
And, you know, they beat the Hart Foundation, which was no small
for
feat
sure.
back then. So, yeah, they were very cool. Very cool. And, lost to Demolition, so yeah, I can go. I'll go. I can get on board Strike Force, and they had that great theme song called "Girls in Cars."
That's true.
It was not good.
Or we can be American
awful.
Males.
Buff
Bagwell and Scotty Riggs.
Yeah, they recently on the WWE's YouTube channel. They do that where they mock the worst of the worst in wrestling, and there was a promo for that, and it looked like a cologne commercial.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah.
I'll throw one more. Sting Luger.
Okay,
that was pretty big powerhouse tag
yeah,
team back
absolutely.
In the early
yeah.
90s.
Yeah, Steiner Brothers maybe.
Steiner
yeah.
Brothers
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, Warner Brothers. But you know,
yeah.
One day we'll figure it out. We'll piece it together what the ultimate tag team is that we are.
Yeah, we'll definitely do a best tag team show. I don't think
Absolutely.
We've done that just yet. But a lot to get to. Of course, we will start on Raw. And I was saying this the other night when I was hosting on Sportsnet 590 The Fan that I really enjoyed Monday Night Raw.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of really good promos, and they finally built up a lot of these big feuds that they're looking forward to getting to come WrestleMania time. But obviously, right off the top, CM Punk taking on Daniel Bryan in a match. Chris Jericho comes out
yeah,
immediately.
Finally,
and they get a pretty good promo. I thought it wasn't too bad. Parts of it were kind of wonky, but for the most part, they started to finally get some momentum. We had a pretty good shout-out from CM Punk towards guys like Bret Hart and people like that.
Yep.
But, I mean, they finally built some heat. And then, of course, after that, after the match, remember, Jericho comes out from backstage, beats up Punk. Puts him in the old school Walls of Jericho,
yes,
which I really enjoy.
Yeah, we really popped for that big time with the old school one. Yeah, that was awesome.
But I mean, I really enjoy that they're finally getting this thing going, and it's finally getting some momentum heading into WrestleMania.
Yeah. I think that they finally had contact with each other. Like, physical contact was a big thing that they needed to do. And I like that they're, you know, I mean, I would have liked to have seen maybe a bigger build, you know, a couple of weeks back so it was even longer. But I thought Raw was a home run because of the angles that they're really setting up for WrestleMania, and that was just, you know, the tip of the iceberg was really putting together the CM Punk Chris Jericho match and understanding, you know, why these guys are feuding and starting to get the good promos back and forth with each other. I thought that was really good, and it's what they needed to do maybe a couple of weeks ago, but I thought that, yeah, the old school Walls of Jericho really made me pop.
I know we've been saying this a lot ever since we knew that these guys were going to be taking on each other at WrestleMania, but is the bar too high for these two guys, do you think?
I don't know if we're overhyping it and really building ourselves up for maybe a possible disappointment. You know, these guys are going to put on a great match, but I don't know if it's going to be more of a street fight than it will be, you know, a wrestling match. These guys are going to, you know, go outside and use tables and chairs and whatnot. I really hope not. I really hope we get the match that these guys can pull off and that potentially do. But I had wondered if, you know, we had compared it to maybe being like a Savage Steamboat match. We're one of the best of all time. And I hope that we're not disappointed. And I hope that it delivers to the level that we know that these two guys can do. But, you know, oftentimes and not, you know, you overhype something and it doesn't live up to your expectations of it. It'll still be a great match, but I don't know if it'll be, you know, one of the best of all time like we're hoping it might be.
And I kind of think back to Royal Rumble where I thought, you know, CM Punk Ziggler was going to be, you know, one of the
yeah.
best matches that I've ever seen or had seen in quite a while, and it wasn't bad. It didn't live up to my expectations, and that's why I kind of have a little bit of fear about this one because it's,
yeah.
you know, two of the top names in all of wrestling. But I love the angle that they're doing. Chris Jericho saying, you know, you just want to be like me, and CM Punk saying, well, you didn't invent anything.
Yeah.
You know, this has been going on forever. So
yeah.
I like the sort of back and forth that they have going on.
Yeah, they're doing a really good job, and this was evident with The Rock and Cena, too, with the sort of it almost seems like they're taking jabs at each other, you know, not personally, but, you know, it has a little bit of realism to it. You know, you think maybe that wasn't scripted. Maybe he, you know, when they go backstage, maybe one of the guys will be, you know, a little bit upset about that. And that was evident in the Cena Rock promo. And even in that one where, you know, Punk was like, well, you know, you haven't really, you know, you haven't invented anything. Like, what are you talking about? So I don't know. I'm sure it's all, if you see it on TV, you know, it's all vetted and whatnot, but it adds a little bit of realism to it, which I like in those angles where, you know, you suspend your disbelief a little bit and think, oh, you know what? Everything else was scripted, but you know what? He wasn't supposed to say that, and he didn't like him saying that.
Yeah, and the other wrinkle I like with the angle is that CM Punk is saying, you know, you're just jealous because, you know, as great as you were never the top guy.
Yeah.
Like, during your era, it was Austin and Rock and
Which is
Triple
very
H,
true.
And that's great. I love that little extra wrinkle that he's thrown into there. Other angles that they touched on Monday Night Raw, the Hoski. Eve continues to come out and talk about
great actress,
and I hope she doesn't write her own promos
because
they are bad. And I couldn't get a read on it because at some parts she was playing the role of a heel, and then other parts she was sort of apologizing and saying you don't understand what's going on here, and then she'd, you know, turn her face back into a heel. Just like the body language and the words weren't just really mixing. It was just, like you said, terrible acting.
Awful. Just awful. It was, I mean, if it wasn't, you know, leading into the main angle of WrestleMania with the John Cena thing, I would have changed the channel. It was that bad, which is saying a lot about a lot of the promos and stuff that we had seen recently in WWE. But I don't understand adding her to the equation, what it's doing. I mean, if she's going to go back with, you know, working into a feud with somebody else, then
Zack Ryder,
yeah. But just the whole Cena thing, and I just don't see what it's adding to the picture and why it's needed.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird situation. I don't think it'll lead into Rock Cena at all.
I hope not.
I think Eve's just going to go on her own thing.
Maybe she'll be the special guest referee of that match. Fingers crossed, guys. Fingers crossed.
When was the last time a female wrestler refereed a match?
I don't know. I feel like Vicky Guerrero's
done
it. Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know.
Actually, you know what? That's probably a good guess.
Yeah, Stephanie McMahon, perhaps.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen one of them in like a referee's outfit in a uniform. John Laurinaitis and Teddy Long, the GM versus GM angle that they've been doing. It's kind of intriguing because you want to see if, you know, one guy does end up taking over both shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got their lackeys, whether it be, you know, David Otunga, and then other people are sticking up for Teddy Long. Like, I guess Ezekiel Jackson's on his side.
Oh, good.
I mean, he's wrestling for Teddy Long, you know, when he wrestles David Otunga and stuff. But like we said about Eve, I mean, the terrible acting with her, this is terrible acting between
this
these two guys.
Awful.
I mean, I enjoy John Laurinaitis because he's sort of comical and he realizes that he's sort of this stupid character.
Yeah.
And I like that, but their back and forth banter is just, I don't know, it's kind of too goofy for
me. It is, and I've loved Teddy Long for years, but his thuggin' and buggin' shtick is, it's really wearing old and wearing thin, and I don't understand, like, they've just seemed to just flip them. It's like, okay, well, John Laurinaitis is now in charge of SmackDown and Teddy Long is now in charge of Raw. I don't know if that's to, you know, because John Laurinaitis is a pretty hot character right now. If they're trying to get the rub on SmackDown with that and putting Teddy Long on the stronger show because it's already established as the brand for WWE television. But it just seemed like a point. It's like a lateral move. It's like a trade in sports where it's just a lateral move. Like, you don't see the point in doing it. It's like they did it just to do it because they couldn't think of anything else to do. But you're right. The promos back and forth. I mean, John Laurinaitis at least is funny. Teddy Long used to be funny, but I don't know what it. I just can't buy into him anymore. As far as his talking goes, there was something that stuck in my mind that he said to John Laurinaitis. I can't think of it right now, but I just remember thinking, like, that was just, what was that? That wasn't an insult. That was ridiculous. Like, I can't remember what it was. It'll come to me eventually, but the promos back and forth, I'm not hyped up about it, and I mean, whatever. I mean, it's nice that they're doing the competition between the two brands, which is what they should have been doing from the get-go, but I don't know. It just seems like a lateral move, a pointless move, something that didn't need to happen.
Right, but like you said, I mean, it's something for these guys to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen in the past before, you know, where Laurinaitis, you know, he had his feud with Punk, and then he sort of just disappears, and we never see him for a while, but I like the fact that they're keeping his character going and keeping him, you know, in the spotlight to kind of, and just, you know, having him do something to keep him busy and have that character still alive. So, I mean, whatever happened to the anonymous Raw general manager? That kind of just disappeared.
Just disappeared. Didn't find out who it was.
We never found out who it was.
It was like the guy that drove the Hummer that ran over Goldberg or whatever it was in WCW. You never figured out who did that.
You never figured it out. So, I mean, I like the fact, though, that they're trying to do something. I mean, it's not great, but it's something, and it's kind of entertaining sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says about it, but obviously the promo of the night, though, Rock and John Cena at the end of the night. I mean, so many good parts. I mean, I was saying this the other night.
that The Rock, I mean, it's just unbelievable how he's able to captivate, you know, the audience there, the audience at home. I mean, he's, you know, chanting Cena's missing balls, and I'm at home chanting Cena's missing balls, missing balls.
Yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable how he's able to just grab you and just make you part of it.
He can turn his head just slightly, and the fans will react to that. You know, he can just look to the left, and people will freak out. It's unbelievable. There's never been, I mean, even Hogan in his heyday, I don't think there's ever been somebody that can captivate an audience like The Rock can. I think it's probably added to the fact that, you know, he's not around as much. You don't see him every week on TV, so when you get a promo from The Rock, especially live, it's something special. So people really gravitate towards that, and the live crowd is going to love The Rock. I mean, they were in Portland, I think, and that was the first time that he was in Portland ever. So that's, you know, a bonus there. But you're right, like, anything he says, automatically they chant it, and he can get them, he has them right in the palm of his hand. He can get them to do whatever they want, and that's just the mark of a great showman and one of the best promo guys of all time in all of wrestling.
And finally we saw Cena fight back a little bit, because every time, you know, it's been Rock and Cena, it's been just a Rock beatdown, but Cena finally came out.
I thought he won this one.
He won this promo battle, finally said some interesting things regarding, you know, The Rock, and you know, one party is talking about writing notes on his wrist.
Which he had notes on his wrist,
which he had notes, and I was talking to you about this before. I mean, I highly doubt that somebody in the back said, go out there, Cena, and, you know, totally give away The Rock and say that he's writing notes on his wrist. I mean, I don't think they would want to embarrass, you know, Dwayne Johnson to that
for
extent.
Sure. And I don't think that The Rock legitimately had those written. You know, I mean, I think he did it for the promo, because how many promos have we seen The Rock come out and just cut off the top of his head? He's never needed notes. You know, I'm sure a lot of what he says he's thought of in the past and scripted to a point, but to come out and blatantly have writing on your wrist like that, and the way he talks with his hands, it was obviously visible on camera. So, I mean, I thought that was just for the, you know, for the whole of the promo and whatnot, to try and get John Cena over, because, I mean, The Rock gets it. He understands that, you know, he's going to be the babyface coming into this, because you don't see him a lot, and John Cena's always there, and he's going to be the heel. So he wants to get some, you know, some heat on John Cena. So for him to say something like that, it was just an easy way of getting heat on John Cena. Anything you see on TV, it's obviously gone by people, and there's no way that they would have gone out and said, you know what, Rock, yeah, you're fine there. It looks like a tattoo. Just put the Sharpie on your wrist, and that way you don't forget your points. There's no way.
Yeah, and one of the things I liked about this promo is that The Rock, you know, I mean, he's known for his catchphrases and comedy and saying goofy things about people, but this time he was actually kind of real about it, and, you know, John Cena was talking about how, you know, WrestleMania, he's fighting for the guys in the back, and then Rock comes out and says, you know, nobody ever fought for me. You know, do you think when, you know, I was struggling and, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin stood up for me? No. Triple H, you know, those guys didn't need people. Roddy Piper, guys like that.
For a Macho Man reference.
Macho Man, Randy Savage as well. So, I mean, I really enjoyed that aspect of The Rock's promo, and then, you know, Cena comes out and basically, you know, continues to run that thing about how he's still going to be here, you know, after WrestleMania, and The Rock, you know, just keeps coming back for these, you know, one night stands, if you will. But I mean, he's, you know, still going to be around, and he's going to beat The Rock at WrestleMania. I mean, it's starting to pick up some steam, like the CM Punk Jericho feud.
Yeah, I thought that the Cena part of the promo was really good. I thought at the beginning The Rock was a little distracted with just getting the crowd to chant whatever he wanted. I think he was just having a little bit too much fun. But as soon as John Cena came out and he finished his promo, The Rock did a 30-second just cut one, and it was one of the best ones he's ever done. It was intense, it was to the point, and it was what people wanted to hear, and it really built up this feud and you know, gave it a lot of momentum going into WrestleMania, even more momentum and steam than it had already, because this is a big match. It's one of the biggest matches of all time. But I thought that that little back and forth between the two just built it up even more.
And I know some people on Twitter, including, you know, Jim Ross, and I think somebody asked him, you know, is there legit heat between The Rock and Cena? He said, well, there may not have been before, but there might actually be now, like, legit, because it looked like The Rock was a little bit flustered and looked pretty angry. Yep. But I mean, you know, we've talked about this before. It reminds you of, like, you know, the late 80s, you know, that kind of wrestling where, you know, you didn't know if it was real or not, if these guys were actually legit angry at each other. And this seems like it's actually starting to become a little bit like that.
Yeah, I think it's just a game of one-upsmanship. Like, each Cena and The Rock are trying to one-up the other one. And it was like in The Rock's DVD that we reviewed last week, you know, he was saying that him and Steve Austin were sort of battling for, you know, number one and 1A, and they were going back and forth on each other. And there was a little bit of tension because, you know, they were both trying to be the best that they could be, and they were throwing, you know, on all cylinders. And I think this is probably a similar situation where, you know, they didn't intend to insult each other, but they just want to be, you know, they want to get that upper hand and want to be the best. That, you know, when John Cena tries to one-up The Rock wants to one-up him, and when Cena gets the better of him, The Rock's not happy. But that being said, The Rock's also a trained actor, so, you know, whether or not he's legitimately upset or if he's, you know, working the crowd and working the angle too, is anybody's guess. I would imagine there's probably not any legit heat backstage between the two. I'm sure they probably went back on the curtain and a big hug and maybe went out for a beer or something afterwards. But you're right. It's this type of angles that, you know, fans really love because you don't know what's real and what's not real.
And that's the thing they've been trying to get back to now, like the realism era, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they've been trying to do with whether it's, you know, Undertaker and Triple H, that seem like...
I mean, they kicked it off with the CM Punk thing where he walked out and was cutting promos about ROH and all these other guys that weren't in the WWE anymore. I think he even mentioned TNA at one point in one of his promos. So, yeah, they've been trying to get back to that, and it's what they do because I think it'll bring back in, you know, the fans like me and you. It'll make us watch some more.
And I know we took calls the other night, and I was asking people, you know, which match are you most excited for? Surprisingly, nobody said Rock Cena. We got about seven or eight calls, and I think it was... maybe split down the middle. Four were excited to see CM Punk Jericho, and the other four were excited to see Triple H and Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell. I mean, one guy mentioned, I know we talked about this before in this podcast, that this potentially could be the last match for both of these guys, and that definitely adds some intrigue to this match, and plus it's Hell in a Cell, which is basically, you know, aside from the casket match, I guess, is pretty much the Undertaker's bread and butter gimmick match. But yeah, surprisingly, nobody said Rock and Cena, but I think, you know, after this, you know, Monday Night Raw, where it seemed like it really picked up some momentum, I'm pretty excited to see it now.
Yeah, I think that the Triple H Undertaker match is going to be a really good one. I mean, and if you factor in Shawn Michaels and Hell in the Cell, I think that, you know, from top to bottom, there's three solid matches right there. And then you factor in, you know, the two, you know, the WWE title fight with Sheamus and Daniel Bryan. But Hell in the Cell is only going to add to this, and if they factor in Shawn Michaels as a special referee, like a lot of people were saying, you know, I think that would be, that's going to make it even better. But this is one of the biggest, best-built WrestleManias as far as the matches go in a long time, because you've got the big one with John Cena and The Rock, which is as legit of a main event as you can possibly get, and they've built the Triple H Undertaker match so well, with the Undertaker looking weak and pulling off the Miracle submission last year, and that could be... you know, in any other year, it could be a legit main event for WrestleMania. And then, of course, you have, you know, CM Punk and Chris Jericho for the world title, which could be a main event match at WrestleMania at any time, too. So the fact that they have three potential main events on this show, it's a really deep show, and it's really exciting going in.
We'll hear from Trish Stratus later in the show. She got a chance to speak with Rudy Blair, but joining us on the line now, another special guest is Arta Ocal of The Score and Aftermath on The Score. Thanks for doing this, Arta.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's always good when you can get other people that definitely know their wrestling. I mean, talking wrestling, as we all know, is just, you know, a lot of fun. It takes you back to your younger days, and I guess for us it takes us back to now. I mean, we're still watching it like yourself, Arta. But obviously, Monday Night Raw was a fantastic show. A lot of good promos, including CM Punk, Chris Jericho, Rock, and Cena as well. And Jeff and I were kind of discussing this earlier, but we felt that both of those feuds really picked up a lot of momentum after this week's episode. What do you think?
I think that I agree with that. I think that I like the positioning of the vignettes on Raw as well. I like that Chris Jericho and CM Punk started Raw, and I like that The Rock and John Cena ended Raw. And what I liked about The Rock and John Cena the most is that you could really feel a genuine air of dislike between the two. This could very well be the biggest work in many, many years, but at the same time, it could very well be a genuine rivalry. And I like the ambiguity. I like that gray area of not knowing, and it makes me more interested in this rivalry. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Is I honestly thought that CM Punk and Chris Jericho would have the best verbal interaction going into WrestleMania, but now I'm second guessing myself. I'm thinking The Rock and John Cena are really holding their own. Not to mention, I mean, The Rock and his whole cheat notes on his arm. We posted something on the Aftermath blog about a nice picture of that. But I mean, I just love the genuineness of it all, and I just love how they both have very good points. I mean, Stephanie McMahon said in Entertainment Weekly that the marketing for this matchup will be kind of, and I know this is a bad comparison, but this is what she said, is going to be like Twilight, like Team Edward versus Team Jacob.
It pretty much has been, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, but I can see how it will be, you know, we're going to divide people, not necessarily babyface and heel, but we're going to divide people based on who they support the most. And you could tell that most of the superstars in the locker room will support John Cena because he's the guy today that's going on those, you know, live events, that's doing all the press tours, et cetera. And The Rock is just appearing, you know, on average once a month.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Rob and I were talking about, is the fact that, you know, you see these guys cut their promos and you say, you know, that was scripted, you know, that was supposed to happen. Oh, wait a second, that shouldn't have happened. Now, I want to get your take on the notes on The Rock's wrist. Now, do you think he was legitimately had those notes on his wrist, or do you think he did that, you know, for his promo sake? Because the WWE knows the way he talks with his hands and that it would likely be on camera. And we've seen The Rock cut, you know, hundreds and thousands of fantastic promos. Do you think this was made up for, you know, for the promo, for John Cena to get that one line in, or do you think he legitimately had those notes on his wrist?
Here's what I think. I think that there is a case to be made on both sides. I do think that there is a strong case for the people that say, oh, well, that was there because John Cena needs a bone. You know what I mean? Like, I can understand that, because The Rock, especially in our age group, you know, that 25 to 34 male that have fond nostalgic memories of The Rock, of course we're going to want The Rock to prevail because we have memories of him and we feel fondly of him and the catchphrases, etc. But here's another thing. I mean, The Rock, in my opinion, the whole, you know, Kung Pao chicken trending on Twitter worldwide, that's already boring to me. Like, honestly, the whole trending on Twitter worldwide gimmick is already boring to me. So I'm looking for new things for The Rock to say. And it kind of reminded me of why I got kind of tired of The Rock in the first place during the Attitude Era, because the Attitude Era was also the era of repetition. And John Cena is not part of that era of repetition. He's a guy who, you know, says what he means, and especially with The Rock. I mean, with The Rock, he's completely himself, which I like a lot. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, could it be a fabric? Could it be a work? Sure. But in my opinion, I'd rather not know. I think that I'm cool with it either way, because at the end of the day, John Cena kind of elevated his game. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of siding with Cena, because I do like the whole guy that, you know, puts his nose to the grindstone and is there all the time.
Now, clearly, Rock Cena is going to be, you know, the most hyped match. I mean, it is the main event at WrestleMania, and a lot of wrestling fans expect CM Punk and Chris Jericho to be the best wrestling match of the night. But where do you think Triple H Undertaker fits in? I know we talked about this last week's podcast, Arda, that basically the fact that they've thrown in the Hell in the Cell wrinkle to it makes it more intriguing. Where do you think this match is going to rank on the card?
It's going to be the most violent match, and you're going to see a lot of blood.
You think they're going to go with the blood, eh?
Yes. I do, because there's no other way that I can conceptualize this match between Triple H and The Undertaker, and especially because they have been pushing the whole we're part of a dying breed and, you know, the old guard, the old generation. Well, guess what happened in the old generation?
A lot of blood, a lot of blading, yeah.
Right?
Do you think that the addition of Shawn Michaels, do you think that adds to anything in this match? I mean, I thought that these two guys could just do it themselves based on their last match, and then you throw the Hell in the Cell in, but it looks like Shawn Michaels is going to get involved. Is he needed?
He's not needed in the match, especially because of the Hell in a Cell wrinkle. I do feel that Shawn Michaels doesn't need to be an enforcer. I certainly don't think he needs to be involved in a triple threat capacity. But in terms of furthering the rivalry going into WrestleMania, it makes a lot of sense because he did face The Undertaker at 25 and 26. So I understand that, and I can appreciate that. But I don't want him involved on the day of.
Do you think that Shawn Michaels, the hair needs to go, Arda? to me, the hair's got to go. You know, it's really receding back there, and he's got the cross eye now. I think the hair's got to go.
You know what, man? Shawn Michaels is immortal to me, so I don't care what he does. He can shave his head if he wants. He can wear sunglasses to cover his eye. I don't care.
Arda Ocal of The Score joining us here on the Top Turnbuckle podcast. He'll join us momentarily as we do our random wrestling question of the week. But now let's listen to Rudy Blair, who got a chance to speak with Trish Stratus about her new movie, Bounty Hunters.
Trish, always great to see you. But I remember when you and I actually, we saw each other a couple of days ago, and I said, wow, you are brunette.
Yes, and I said, right, still.
Yeah, no, I've never seen your hair this dark. I mean, you got the tan and everything else. You look fantastic.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Like, do you get younger while I get older?
Well, I believe the yoga has something to do with it. And if you maybe tried some yoga, you would know the effects of yoga.
I will actually have a competition for this yoga coming up very soon, which I actually need, so I'm looking forward to it. So thank you for the invite.
My pleasure.
But more importantly, thank you for the DVD that I had a chance to see before everybody else. Bounty Hunters, you kick ass big time.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
first of all, I didn't realize that you wanted to get into acting. I know you've done so many other things with, of course, wrestling, and you've had TV shows, but I didn't know you were getting into acting.
Well, you know, it's something that when I retired, I always said I'm not actively pursuing it, but I always said, of course, I'm going to entertain the possibility if something great landed on my desk. And it's just like in wrestling. Everyone says, will you go back? Well, sure, if something great was presented to me, I would entertain it. So same thing with the acting, with the movie role. Something great was presented presented to me. This script landed on my desk, and the role was, you know, not a, I mean, let's be honest, not a big stretch. Jules Taylor is Trish Stratus to a certain degree, right? And then just the fact that I could go in, I took on like a producing role to approach these fight scenes, I guess just a little bit differently. I knew that I could go in and help be part of something and put the process together. I love storytelling. And so to come on in that capacity was why I took the project.
Well, let's talk about your character in the movie, because when people watch this, they're going to realize it's not just about action. There are a couple of levels to your character that you have to listen to very closely to realize what kind of person she is.
Yeah, you know, she was, like I said, not a huge stretch, but I mean, it allowed me to sort of explore a new medium, right? To come in a new capacity. Obviously, in wrestling, we had the chance to be different characters and different levels. So I guess this Jules Taylor gave me a chance to explore that a little bit further.
And of course, you're working for an outfit, Bounty Hunters.
Yes, I'm a bounty hunter, and the story is pretty cool. We get you've seen the movie, so it kind of is like a callback to old school action flicks, right? It has the same kind of storyline, the same kind of plot, and the same kind of action.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, don't want to give too much away because want folks to watch it, though. But, I mean, we'll get into the action in a little bit, but your co-stars, one of them people should know from, if I'm correct, Much Music, because he does the, the videos when they're cutting the videos up and everything?
Video on Trial?
On Trial,
yes. Boomer Phillips is in this movie, and he's my co-star, and he's so funny. You know, and I'll tell you what's interesting is on, you know, the script, it's an action flick. And Patrick, the director, basically, I tip my hat off to him because he kind of went to the actors, hey, go with it, you know, and he gave us that creative freedom. And so when he gave that sort of, you know, green light to Boomer Phillips, well, he is just so funny and everything he says is comedy gold. And, you know, at the end of the day, Patrick, the director, said, I had to go cut this film now, and I was forced to decide, is this going to be a straight up action movie, or will I go with what you guys gave me and make this an action comedy? So thankfully he went with the second one, and I think by doing that he created this really interesting, organic, just fresh, fun film.
How much research did you do for being a bounty hunter? I mean, did you watch The Dog or anything like that, or what?
You know, it wasn't so much the research into the profession of being a bounty hunter. Of course, you know, I was a former police officer.
Yes.
in Muncie, Indiana, so I had that experience. But what I did do a lot of research on is my fighting art. So Jules Taylor is trained specifically in Krav Maga, which is an Israeli special ops fighting. And the fight coordinator was really specific about each character having a really defined role in what they do and different sort of training styles. So I went in before the film was shooting, and I trained and I learned this new fighting art, which was an exciting new venture for me. And then Andrea James-Louis, she's my nemesis in the film. She's Ruby. Okay, we got together, and to me, I knew from wrestling it was really important to have that chemistry with someone in order to deliver something that's, an interesting dynamic. She's a martial artist. I was a Krav Maga trained. And so the two of us, when we finally got together, really created for some interesting moments.
Absolutely, because here you are. You're basically kicking butt on all the big guys, but the toughest woman is the one about your height, your size, and everything else.
Yep, and that's just always the case, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it looked really realistic because I was actually trying to slow down some of that, and I know with your wrestling skills and everything, but you cannot tell me there's a scene somewhere that you actually got decked or something.
There was a few moments, but it's just like wrestling. I mean, here's the thing. We decided, we were approaching the fight scenes as traditional movie making. We would be stunt work, right? So Trish Stratus, who is used to wrestling, didn't understand the concept of not making contact. So, she's from a martial arts background. She also has some stunt background, some stunt training. And we sort of said to each other, you know, let's, much like Patrick said to the actors, you know, have your creative freedom with the script. He kind of said that with the action scenes. He said, go ahead and do what you're doing comfortably. And so that's how we approached it. We kind of, instead of approaching it as stunt people, we approached it as fighters. And I really believe, you talk about this realism, I think the fact that we know what it's like to be punched in the face, and we know how to deliver a real punch. So I think that's why there is that extra, you know, realism that was delivered. And it's just like Gina Carano in her current film, Haywire. I think people were blown away by this. And so I'm really excited about the chance to showcase what we did as sports performers, as sports entertainers, because I think it's people kind of maybe underestimate what we do as performers.
Now, again, I don't want to give away the ending, but what are the chances of a Bounty Hunters Part 2 or TV series, because there's so many layers to this, I think this could still keep going.
You know what? There is a lot of layers to this, and I think because the characters are so interesting, you know, and Boomer Phillips and I, we definitely talked about doing something because, you know, you just have that chemistry with someone. I know I had the same thing with Chris Jericho. You create these moments. I definitely had it with my nemesis on screen, and that's why they're special moments. So Boomer Phillips and I, we definitely, I think it'd be great to make something and maybe go a little bit more comedy ended, just, you know, for his sake.
Well, I cannot wait for that. I can't wait for fans to get a chance to see this. Now, as we're wrapping this up, I have to ask you a question. It's a wrestling question. Of course, we all know WrestleMania is coming up, and, you know, wrestling is back on the spotlight with so many things from CM Punk wanted to kick Chris Brown's rear to so many things. One of the things that I have been very critical about lately has been the women wrestling, and I want to get your thoughts on this because I just am not impressed with what I have been seeing. In fact, maybe one or two wrestlers that I am impressed with even with what they've been doing with them is, you know, embarrassing to me. I want to get your thoughts on what you think of the current roster of divas.
Well, you have to maybe change your question a bit. Now, the current roster of divas, I think, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So everyone says, oh, the women's division's not great right now, but actually, the roster is great. You have Natalia, you have Eve, you have Beth, you have Kelly. They've really brought their game. Even the Bellas, I mean, if you think of where they came from and what they're doing now, you know, the caliber of wrestling that could be delivered right now is there. It's just a matter, of course, like always, what's holding them back is the lack of character development. And really, that's what I think helped us elevate our women's division, was because we had, and it's just like this movie role, we had these defined characters. And so that's what helps. That's what lets people relate to someone. That's what lets people get, you know, sort of invested in that person. And so that's lacking right now. So unfortunately, that's the only thing that's holding them back. But I think as soon as we see that, when we saw the return of Karma at Royal Rumble, that to me was an exciting moment because fans are excited. She's kind of a defined character mostly from her TNA development. So if she comes in and breathes new life into the women's division, hopefully to give a chance for the rest of women to shine as well.
But when they got Natalia, who, you know, easily could hold the world championship, and they have her passing gas every 2 seconds, I feel so bad for her because you know what kind of caliber wrestler she is, but they've got her in this awful comedy sketch. Plus, and I'm curious about this too, when you were wrestling, were your matches longer than what we're seeing now? Because if it goes past 4 minutes, I'm surprised.
No, absolutely, but it took us time. And this is what I always say. We started off with the same literally, they have 1 minute matches sometimes, which is like, obviously, how can you invest as a fan when you have 1 minute? But we just started with that as well. Jazz and I remember the time when we had 1 minute, then it was 2 minutes, and it was up to us to go out there and take those 1-2 minutes and turn it into something really memorable and leave the fans wanting something more. So I even say with the with the Natalia gimmick, you know, embrace it. You know, you have the audience. You have the audience's attention. So take it, make them fall in love with you, make them demand seeing more of you. You know, so I think any moment, you know, 2 minutes is better than 0 minutes at this point, right? So something's better than nothing. Go out there, make people fall in love with you, and take every chance you can to just capture the audience.
Well, one other question, though, but when I watch TNA wrestling, Impact Wrestling, they're wrestlers. I see them as wrestlers. I mean, they get plenty of time. They get plenty of, you know, showcasing their talents. I mean, do you think the WWE needs to look more at what they're doing there than, you know, dealing with the gimmicks and the little puns?
It would be nice. And I guess it's just a different time. Like, we had to fight every week to get our spot, and we got to the point where the fans demanded more women's matches and that caliber matches. And believe me, when we started, we had 2 minutes and we had the fans chanting puppies because that's what they were used to doing. We had to re-educate them, show them that we were more than just that. And each week we just had to build and continue the momentum. So yes, it's obviously the creative department's job if they're interested, and obviously to take that vested interest. Fit Finley at the time was working with the women, and he, you know, that made a huge difference. You have to have that supporter in there as well. So I'm not sure what's happening backstage, but hopefully times will change. There's certainly the caliber of women are there. It's just a matter of, you know, the fans wanting it, and then obviously it's got to be delivered from the back as well.
As we're wrapping this up, of course, you have your yoga studio. For folks who want to get involved, where do they go? Website, the whole bit.
If you want to join Rudy and his yoga involvement, see, now you got to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
StratosphereYoga.com is my yoga studio. It's just north of Toronto in Vaughan. And yeah, we have all different levels. We have three different studios. So the goal for Stratosphere for me was just to open up a place that could have something for everyone. So all different levels, all different styles. And you're going to fit in just fine, Rudy Blair.
As long as you're teaching me.
Okay. Is that the?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you refuse to go with anyone else?
Yeah.
What if I did yoga with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're gonna do some yoga.
Fantastic. Website?
TrishStratus.com. Get all your information. Bounty Hunters. So it's TrishStratus.com/Bounty Hunters for all your information. Read more about Boomer Phillips and Andrew James Louie and Frank as well. There's all your information.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of it.
There's Rudy Blair in his conversation with Trish Stratus. Her new movie, Bounty Hunters, now out on DVD. And as we do every week, it is now a random wrestling question of the week. And this one came from Jeff. He, you know, texted me earlier today and said, want to talk about our best or our favorite military wrestlers?
There's been so many, though. And they're corporals and sergeants.
And I said, you know what? Whatever. Let's just do it. I mean, that's why it's called the random wrestling question of the week. Joining us to do it is Arta Ocal of Aftermath on the Score. And I guess we'll start with you, Arta, since you're our special guest this week. Who is your favorite military wrestler?
To look at? Major Guns.
Of course, yes.
Is that even an argument?
No argument for me. I think we can just end the conversation there.
Yeah, right.
In terms of,
you're right. There's been so many. I mean, I always liked the Iraqi sympathizer, Sergeant Slaughter, only because it was something new, and it was definitely hot at the time in 91, and I never expected him to be WWE champion, so I thought that was really cool. I mean, I always thought that there were more legs to Sergeant Craig Pitbull Pittman, but not when he had that was it Cobra, I think was the name of the
Cobra,
guy,
right?
In WCW.
His rival from the Marines, right?
That was a wash. I mean, I never liked that, but I did think that Pitbull Pittman had something going, especially with the code red armbar. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was always, and Rob knows this, and Arto, you'll come to learn this, that the Iron Sheik is my all-time favorite wrestler. He was great back then. He's wonderfully crazy now. So I got to go with Colonel Mustafa as my favorite military wrestler, because he came out walking like the Bushwhackers, and he still had the curly-toed boots, and, you know, he was, you know, affiliated with Sergeant Slaughter and General Adnan going into that big match with Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan, and I think Sid Justice was involved as well. But I always got to go with the Iron Sheik, but I know Rob's going to come up with, I think it was Hugh Morris's alter ego later on in late WCW.
Yeah, of course, you got to go with Hugh G. Rection, just to say that.
General Rection.
General Rection, just to say that. I mean, it pretty much says it all. I mean, what, like we mentioned, Major Guns and
G.I. Bro, Lieutenant Loco.
Oh my goodness, that whole angle. I mean, it's just an unforgettable time for me in WCW.
Late WCW was so good. It was so bad that it became so good. It was so funny to me.
Anybody else you can think of, Arta?
Well, we forgot the Corporal Kirshner, yeah, and the Colonel Beers, and oh man, there's just so many. It's not even it's too many to count. It's almost like an investigative piece.
Yeah, it's kind of silly how many how many military wrestlers are
there. Have it's,
I
like,
mean, you really have to do you really have to think about it and really pull out some crazy names. So.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
What about the Patriot? Would you count him as a military guy? Because he's kind of, I don't know, borderline patriotic.
Yeah, that's true.
Soldier of the country.
I was gonna say the Bolsheviks. Do the Bolsheviks count? I guess they go in the Patriot.
Yeah.
Category of maybe guys that weren't in the military, but
so much, yeah.
Yeah, but just
a random fact about Nikolai Volkov, by the way. You know, he always used to get cut off for the Soviet national anthem.
Yeah.
The only time he sang it in completion was at WrestleMania 1, and the guy to finally cut him off at the end was his tag team partner, the Iron Sheik, your favorite wrestler.
Yeah, amazing, and did the Hawks poo, right?
Exactly.
Just a side note on the Iron Sheik. Arta, do you I don't know. It's verified Twitter account as far as the Iron Sheik. Do you actually believe that's him?
I think the Megan boys who handle his agent, like they agent him, they're very good guys. They live in Toronto. They put on a lot of legend shows.
Yeah.
I think they have a stake in the Twitter account.
Okay.
I don't know how much they actually tweet as the Iron Sheik, but I know that they're involved with Sheiky's day-to-day operations and they handle him. So it's Paige and Gian, good guys. And they, I don't know. There was a story in Forbes with the Iron Sheik, and I think they explained their relationship. I think his dad and the Iron Sheik were friends in Iran, and
right.
They both happened to come come to North America separately, and then all of a sudden one day on television they saw the Iron Sheik on TV swearing in Farsi, and he goes, hey, I know that guy, he's like my good buddy. So the Sheik used to come to their house for dinner and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's funny. My favorite tweet of the week from the Iron Sheik, because I tell everyone that's on Twitter, you have to follow the Iron Sheik because he's hilarious. I like that he cleared up the fact that Kevin Love, the basketball player, and Brother Love were not related. I thought that was great. I thank him for that, because I was wondering.
Yeah, of course. I mean, geez. any last name, right? Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you really do have to follow the Iron Sheik on Twitter. Arda, thanks for doing this. Where can people follow you on Twitter? What is your Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's ARDA_OCAL. And yeah, Aftermath on Tuesdays and Fridays on The Score. And I really appreciate being on your podcast, guys, anytime.
There is Arda Ocal of The Score joining us here on Top Turnbuckle. We'll definitely be having him on once again, as long as David Alter and Rudy Blair are not here, as it is just myself and Jeff Rahoman. Jeff, another successful Top Turnbuckle.
Absolutely. Another great random wrestling question. You know, we were able to throw out random tag teams earlier on. Love when we can get the 80s guys referenced.
And you know, we need to get some more random wrestling questions out there. So if you follow us on Top Turnbuckle,
yes,
on the Twitter account at Tom Turnbuckle, I always mess it up every week, at Top Turnbuckle. If you follow us on there, please send us a random wrestling question of the week. Of course, you can check us out on the Cage Side blog on sportsnet590.ca. For Jeff Rahoman, I'm Rob Wong. This has been Top Turnbuckle on sportsnet590.ca.